Okay, we have returned from closed session, and we will reconvene our regular session at 7:35. We have nothing further to report out from closed session. Next item. Oh, we have one other person. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
All right. That wants to address the board, Joanne Van Eyck, Teachers Association of West Covina.
Good evening. I'm coming here under the direction of the Executive Board of the Teachers Association of West Covina, and I just wanted to say that the collective bargaining agreement between the Teachers Association and the Board of Education expires in June 30th of 2011. And according to our Article 2 of our contract, a successor agreement needs to be negotiated. On December 8th, we submitted a sunshine to the district in a timely manner, hoping that we could get underway with negotiations. Our contract tells us we have to do it by January 15th, and we figured that that would be a timely manner for the district to get it into the board agenda prior to the January 15th for public view and public comment. However, we have yet to see it, and January 15th is in a few days. So we're kind of not following the deadline. I just wanted to see if there was an issue with that, but I know that we were required to submit it, and it's supposed to be submitted to public view by January 15th, and we haven't seen it yet.
We did discuss that. We were aware of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the business session, organizational items, the approval of the agenda and consent items. Is there anybody who wishes to remove something from consent? Oh, before I do that, I have been notified. There are two items, item numbers B under the business section, number 6 and number 7, will be tabled for this evening due to illness from the presenters, and so that we will make every effort to have that discussed on January 25th.
So 5 and 6?
5 and 6 will be tabled.
5 and 6.
Right?
Not
7? Not 7? We're all right with 7?
You meant 6 and 7, right?
I meant 6 and 7. What about, I said 6, I thought I said 6 and 7. 5 is still we're going to discuss tonight?
If you wish.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I would. I mean, it should
take
a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so 6 and 7 will be tabled. 6 and 7 will be tabled.
Okay.
Anything else to be removed from consent?
I have Mr. Cox.
Uh-huh.
Items 2, 13, 14, and 24.
2.
Mm-hmm.
13, 14, and
24.
Anybody else? Anybody to add to consent? Then is there a motion, please? All right, the motion has been moved by Tammy Polos, seconded by Lynn Miranda Jimenez to approve the agenda with the removal from consent of items number 2, tabling items 6 and 7, removal of 13, 14.
2, 13, 14.
I said 2, 6, 7, 13, 14, and 24. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion is so ordered. Item number 2, Mr. Spence.
Yes, I ask that it's taken off because under items 115 and 120.
115.
And 120 on page 35, there's conclusions that are drawn about action or positions of the district, and I'm going back and listening to the tapes, those discussions really didn't take place the way they're described in here. For example, on 120, it talks about the board decided to allow the funding as established at this time. But we also asked for information on different items and the costs and what that would actually be as well. And, you know, I would prefer in our minutes if we just kind of stuck to what the actions were rather than some of the other things that talked about. Same with 115. Actually, so that whole discussion about independent charters, there were a lot of questions, and actually the superintendent said this was the first time we heard about it, so I don't think the district actually took a position like it states in here. So I think there's a lot of things like that that don't belong in our minutes.
Is this a different action or methodology that we're going to report out on that? No.
Because I don't think, in listening to tapes, it accurately reflects, or it only takes into account a few of the things that were discussed, not all of them, and in some cases, I think, doesn't accurately reflect what was discussed or talked about. And in some cases, I don't think there was a conclusion drawn. And so I'd like to strip out the, you know, I think we can just talk about that we discussed, representative spoke, about the matrix and, you know, just keep it generic rather than decide what we include in here from a discussion that lasted over an hour and a half. And it's the same with the lottery one on 120. All the other items just mentioned by consent, we did this, we did that, you know, the different actions.
Do you have any comments or questions for Ms. Castillo?
Well, I believe that the minutes accurately get the basic core of conversation in both cases, but I'm open to Mr. Spence's recommendation for how he would alter it. I think it's difficult for Monica to capture an hour and a half and give both the spirit of the conversation and the actual comments made. So this is the way she's always done it. This is not different from how she does it, but I'm open to suggestions or the board majority's ideas about how it should be reworded.
See, I mean, I would just have a statement that says representatives from Medicine Learning spoke about the matrix that they developed with the district. Both parties agreed to meet and further outline the completion of that last sentence of the matrix and definition of the dependent stance and hopes of moving forward. Because there was a lot of discussion about lots of different items in there that are included in here. And then on the lottery, just saying that we discussed lottery, you know, board members discussed the possibility of using lottery funds to supplement other expenditures. I mean, that's what we did.
Yeah, I think the public, you know, because they have access to the audio, needs to have enough information so that they can decide whether they want to listen to the audio. And sometimes it's not enough, and sometimes it may be too much. And so I know that Monica struggles to capture it all and not be fair in her representation to the
mm-hmm.
public about, you know, the comprehensive discussion, not just mm-hmm. very basic sentences.
Well, I don't think it accurately, I listened to the tape, I don't think it accurately it reflects all the stuff we talked about or some of the conclusions that are drawn in here.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we just, and just as general guidance, I think, from here on out is to use an issue of at least an introductory sentences to give the gist of what was talked about. So the first sentence, as far as I'm concerned, other than... all right, that they have. They actually just leave the first sentence and the last sentence.
Are you looking at 115?
115, excuse me, I'm sorry, 115. Representatives from Medicine Learning spoke about the matrix that, well, they had developed when the district became concerned over a variety of issues, beginning with declarations made from the principal at the June 22nd Board of Education meeting. Both parties agreed to meet further and further outline the completion of the matrix and definition of their dependent status in hopes of moving forward.
I'm fine with that if we change the word declarations, because I don't think speaking at a board meeting is necessarily a declaration. With issues made.
Statements?
Or beginning with.
I don't care. I mean.
A variety of issues beginning, you know, with statements.
Go ahead.
It's better than declaration. Sounds like you signed a notary.
Shoemaker.
And that you made something under
well,
perjury or something.
Well, it also is
like
saying you made statements, you declared something. It's not necessarily written.
I
don't agree that the wording should be changed. This was a very comprehensive discussion that went into what is outlined here. I don't think there are major issues that I recall that aren't being mentioned here. And I think for the public to understand what happened at a meeting, some detail is needed. And I don't think that the paragraph here draws conclusions that were not drawn at the meeting. Edison did state that they believed that they were an independent charter. We did discuss the fact that we disagreed with them. That's not true.
We didn't.
Mr. Spence, you yourself
just
said.
Just a minute. We'll do one at a time. We'll do one at a time.
Think that they were an independent charter. And so I clearly said that it wasn't a good partnership for him to say that they believed that they were a independent charter, that that's not what our contract calls for, and there were several areas that they did not meet to be an independent charter. That is all clearly there in the record in what I said. And so, again, I don't believe that this misinforms the public on what happened at the meeting. It clearly gives Edison's position. It clearly gives what our responses were. You know, from there, the public can listen to the tape. And I think it's important that there is enough detail that should the public want to listen to the tape, they know this is where they find the issue.
Ms. Poles, do you have any comments?
I do believe that we should. I remember reading the minutes before I was on the school board. And it was nice to have more than just the first and the last sentence. Because this looks like, well, I might really need to go and listen to the tape myself. Because there was much more to it than that first and last sentence. It's almost misleading if you think it's only those two things. It might not agree with what's in the middle. If I could hear some other suggestions on how that would look. But I think we're doing a disservice when we take that out, because people wouldn't even know it was an issue if you just read it the first and the last sentence. You know, because we spent a lot of time on
I mean, the idea of having, you know, the assistant to go through and digest an hour and a half discussion in, you know, three sentences is not fair. So, you know, we need to either, you know, come up with some ideas as to how, you know, to digest, you know, that significant amount of time and discussion into, you know, short period of time or three short sentences. So, I mean, we have to be, you know, it has to be fairly straightforward what was discussed, the various items that were discussed, and that's it.
I'm fine with that. Like, if it said representatives from Edison Learning spoke about the matrix and with that they developed with the district, and you know, the issues that were discussed dealt with special education, status of independent school, oversight issues, what else was talked about? Financial issues. If it listed just those things,
those
without
particular
drawing
items,
conclusions,
then that would
about
draw
them,
exactly what
I don't have a problem with
Cammie
that.
Was talking about.
I
is that?
I don't know if bullet points are okay. And I was thinking the same thing.
But I don't have
but
a problem with
I
that.
I could look at that and I'd go, I really want to hear these issues.
Right.
But it.
I think drawing conclusions in the minutes in a big, long conversation like that is hard. And, you know, if it listed all the things in the matrix, those various issues, special ed, you know,
or
pre-K,
lottery, I think it was, yeah,
lottery, or whatever, you know, what was it, attendance, what else were they, what are the financial issues, you know, if it listed all those things, then I'm fine with that, that's fine.
Absolutely.
It's drawing the conclusions that I have the problem with, because why are we drawing conclusions about some of those items and not others? You know, it raises all those kinds of issues that bother me. But if we list all the issues, I'm fine with it.
Okay, well, can I just know which conclusions are not correct? Or what are conclusions?
Yeah.
Where do you see conclusions? I think, you know, Monica tried very clearly to state what they said and what was discussed by us in our statements. I mean, that was the attempt.
Mm-hmm. The district disagrees since they provide oversight. They are held accountable by the debts and liabilities. Both parties agree. I think this whole independent charter discussion, we actually didn't come to a conclusion because it was the first time we had heard that.
Well, I heard every member of the board say this is the first time we've ever heard
Edison
say.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we disagree with it.
The board said this is the first time we've ever heard Edison publicly say that they
mm-hmm.
think of themselves as an independent
Correct.
Charter school.
Correct.
That was a fact.
I'm not arguing that.
And as you know, subsequent to that, there will be lots of discussions publicly about
uh-huh.
their interpretation and where they want to go with that and what the board wants to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the public has the right to know that, you know, it's not as simple as whether they're independent or not independent, but all the ramifications on either side. And in order for someone to have an interest in coming to hear that, they need to have enough information to draw those conclusions. I would think that the board wants to be as transparent as possible, specifically when it comes to things like this, and more information is better for the public than less.
Well, I agree with you, so let's put all the information in there and not draw conclusions.
Well, tell us what we didn't put in there.
And, well, I just listed a bunch of issues that aren't in here about special education, about the financial stuff. But I think, you know, we can talk about, you know, there was discussion about the definition of independent charter and how it relates to oversight. That's what we talked about. We didn't draw conclusions. That's my only issue. Let's list them all, because we didn't list them all in this paragraph here. If you want to talk about transparency, we didn't list them all in this paragraph. We only listed a couple. But let's just take out the conclusion and we made decision stuff, because we didn't. And was not an action item.
Okay, I recommend that we table it, that you provide in writing to Monica for the next board meeting so that we can bring it back. You know, I hate to spend time doing that here. I see no conclusions here, but you do. And I accept if the board would like to write this, I'm fine with that. I just would appreciate, there's just too much involved in this to make a hasty cross this out, dot this I, change this. So I agree, Mr. Spence, that other things need to be included. But for me, more inclusion is better, less inclusion is not good.
I'm fine with anymore.
All right, let's do that. We will table this item and bring it back at the next meeting. If board members want to make recommendations to any particular item of the minutes, then please submit those to the superintendent in sufficient time.
Anything.
Anything in the entire item on item in the minutes of special meeting for December 21st. And and have them back to you by what, Monday? Tuesday? A week from
Monday
today?
Monday would be good. Monday
better?
Mm-hmm. Monday's right. Good. Well, Monday's a holiday. But
Monday's a holiday.
All right, so Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning.
The 18th.
The 18th. Right, thank you. Okay, I'm forward on the consent.
I just have a question about that item. If
Which
let's
one?
Say number two, if we all send in revised minutes.
I'm sorry, I did say the minutes of the 21st. I meant the minutes of the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
We all send revised minutes in for the 14th. and it sounds like people have understanding to me what has happened. Who's going to try to merge all of those?
Well, the board president and I will try to do that.
Okay.
We'll do our best. All right. Next item on the agenda is the business section. You'll notice, board members, that slightly changed the organization and the of the agenda to maybe look at some different, or at least perhaps my priorities as far as looking at items with respect to the financial statements, the budgets, and various other items. And I'd like to bring those forward and discuss at the beginning of the meeting. And over the period of time, we'll have sort of instructional, informational type items and perhaps some items to to take action on. For instance, this evening I had intended to discuss this budget development calendar, which we will discuss. To start off, I wanted to have some discussion about, I call it SACS in the schools, but the SACS system is the accounting system that we have, and I want to make sure everybody understands what the accounting code structure is and the extent to which various operational reports are available and that we could ask for. And then also I wanted to kind of start off from the beginning, take a look at the general fund, look at where we are now, look at where we have been over the last 5 years, and so that when we go forward in the budget and development process that we'll be able to have an understanding about where we're going and how we're proceeding in that manner. So unfortunately, Dana Smith is not able to be with us this evening, and even though the superintendent did volunteer to do her utmost in making these decisions, I thought it'd be best if we had everybody that's part of this as being part of this and moving forward. So that's why I've tabled this. So the next item on the agenda is an information report regarding the budget development calendar.
Okay. Board members, you have before you, and I'll speak to it for the public, budget development in public education is a very interesting circle of revisiting budgets. We could start either at the point of October when we actually know how many students we're going to have, because the state requires us on a certain date in October to report how many students. And you know that most of our funding is based on the number of students that we enroll and attend our schools. But at the same time, in January, governors usually come out with their budgets, and we know basically what they're going to do, and we also continuously do two things. So I want to premise my comments regarding a budget development calendar in that you are always working on current year modifications, you're working on projections for next year, and you are constantly refining through board action the budget as you move money around. The state, as you know, defers a lot of funds at times that, you know, you really have thought you were going to count on monies coming in November, December. You end up getting it in June. And so both the present year and the next year are constantly revisited almost every single month with staff and with the board. Okay? So if we look at it in terms of the instructional calendar, we are now in October, or in past October, we knew what the count was that we could sort of project for the coming year in terms of the students that we're going to receive money for. So that's an important thing that we talk about in the current year. We analyze our student enrollment projections, and we make sure that those are correct for staffing purposes, for decisions in terms of money. At the same time, in December, the board receives the first interim report that sort of corrects any new changes that were going on in terms of our projections. And so I just want to be clear that you could start this conversation with discussion about January, or you could start this discussion in terms of how we currently are fixing and adjusting budgets based on this year's enrollment. Okay? So if we look at it, both of these paths continue down the path all year, every year. So the board, for example, was informed that the governor, Jerry Brown, has said that he is going to try to refrain from slashing K-12 this time because he felt that we had already given enough. But then came information that said, however, he is going to defer some of the money that we were going to get. So every time we get new information from the state, from the federal government, from grants, these are constant items that move money and are brought to the board for action. If you look at after the first interim report, you look at the review of the final state budget and the assumptions that they base that on. If you look at what happens after January, we start reviewing all the budgets that the federal state now is going to say they're referring, they were going to give us the money at this point, but we're going to change it. And you will see that as a result of those deferrals, you will get in every budget packet, in every board packet practically, monies that get adjusted. Okay? Basically, the important thing to note in terms of the public is that there is never money that comes in and out of the school district without board notification and approval. All of that has to come before the board. So if we get lucky and we get a grant or we want to write a grant, that comes forward at whatever point in time. So I've given you sort of a general budget development calendar that says we're still refining this year, but now we're working on next year. We're going to continue to refine this year all year, but we're going to start for next year. Well, what happens in March of this year? In March of this year, you review the second interim. And in those, you're going to look at updates. You're going to look at changes that, you know, may come down or any major reductions. You will see that for the past 10 years, we've received ADA 1 year of a certain amount, then got the next year, and it was cut. Another year, it wasn't cut fully, it wasn't restored fully. So it's always a moving target, but the best way to describe the budget calendar is that you looked for key dates, which I would consider, you know, the first budget that we present to the board, and then all of the changes through the year, and then the last budget that you adopt in terms of next year. And obviously, the board is very aware that board basically has decisions to make based on projections, which have ramifications or affect our staffing for the following year. And you know by state law that by March 15th, we have to give notice if we think we're going to have any kind of reduction in force. And we've been very fortunate in our district not to have to have done that thus far. Having said that, if you look at this calendar, May, June, July, August, September, look at that instead of a flat piece of paper, it's a round cyclical, just gets repeated over and over. When the board reviews unaudited actuals for the year, you are looking at a certain number based on what we know at the time. And I know it's sort of frustrating and confusing because I always say it's a snapshot until some other decision impacts a change in that budget. So you can't look at a budget on a certain month as you would maybe your finance at home and say, well, this is what I can count on. Our money is so flexible in terms of coming and going based on state, based on a federal government, that we basically are month by month making these kinds of decisions. But going forward, you look at, we will bring you the second interim, which will come in March. We will, in April, continue to review any additional information that we have and make adjustments. You'll see that in the board report. Then in May, the governor then issues a May revised budget. And in that May revised budget, there will be new information, I am sure, that impacts education and impacts the ability to project and plan and focus our resources. So you, again, and may have another opportunity to have more information regarding the governor. Then in June, the board reviews budget updates for any additional federal state revenues or any major reductions. In July, the district closes the fiscal books for that previous year. So it takes us, as you all know, school ends in June, and it takes our business office, and in every district, it takes a time to make sure that all bills for that year are paid, all monies have been accounted for, and then the board gets a report of the final fiscal impact of that year. In August, we prepare again unaudited actuals, and in September, the board reviews again unaudited actuals, and then in December again. So as you can see, almost every month, there is information that is required to be analyzed, and it has impact on our decisions.
January is when our audit comes in, right? Because I don't see that here, right? Okay, so I'm going to add that. Thank you. Audit is finalized in January.
Prepare the unaudited actuals that happen in August.
Right.
Then we do, they go through the audit, depends on when the audit is completed, and as soon as the audit's completed, then we get the reports.
Okay,
so it just happens to be January this year.
Yeah, the audit is either December or January. It usually is, the audit does not go into details about this budget development. The audit is based on state standards for budgeting public funds, and they look at that, and then they give us their report. But that's a different audit than this, what we call unaudited.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? No? I do. On so in this, in as we go in this process and development, in the past, normally we've been giving in, as a board, we give input with respect to budget assumptions, as you said, as far as the information that comes to us with respect to the governor's anticipated budget, what's actually passed, what comes through in the May revise. So it's a constant, it's constantly moving target as to where we are. But in that process, you know, we need to be more involved in giving guidance with specific resource codes so that we've got information, say, for instance, a lottery, for instance, which is what we discussed at the last board meeting, talk about where we've spent it, where what we anticipate that we're going to get, and we tend to be a year in arrears in our actual spending, give guidance and direction as to the development. I think that what I want to become more involved with, or as what I want the board to become more involved with, is the development of those priorities as to the spending, the EduJobs money that came through at the last minute, to be have that come in and be processed into the system and done within certain parameters that the board establishes and based on recommendations from staff. And so hopefully from time to time we'll get information based on resource codes, object codes, not only the revenue side but also the expenditure side. So we may get a resource code might be the charter school income from Cavan and San Jose Edison. And then ultimately, what expenses are those funds going to be used against? We could even ask for information by location, for instance, so we can get ideas about the spending at various schools and that sort of thing. So that's what I'm looking for in the next several board meetings, is to try to accumulate information, because the more information we have, the more questions will probably be generated and better direction as to where we want the board to go. We are facing some very serious concerns in the next couple of years with respect to deficits and deficit spending, and we need to get that under control now while we can, while we have the money available, money in reserves, so that we are aware of where it is. And the other thing that I want to make sure that we understand is what I'll call the structural deficit, so that we can eliminate some of that one-time timing of where money comes in, when it's going to come in, and the you know, one-time money that comes in versus the timing as to when it actually gets spent out, so that we can kind of filter all of that out, come down to the nuts and bolts, what's our revenue limits, what is our ADA, what is our spending per student, and where are we going to spend it. Go ahead.
If we're not getting the money until after the end of the school year, mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what you're asking. Are we not going to do the service then, so we don't have a deficit? Because some of our money we're not going to, for this school year, we're not getting until July.
Those are cash flow issues, and of course that affects the revenues and that sort of thing. But we'll have to do that, and that's what we did with the $1 million last month when we took out of the budget fund and moved forward into the general fund to anticipate, you know, shortfalls in funding and deferrals from the state. But overall, we still need to know how we intend to spend revenues that we get, and that's the focus that I'm looking for. Or should I say it a different way? The money that we anticipate getting, and then how and when we get it depends on actually when we receive it.
It's not even going to be for sure that we get it.
Yeah, that may be true.
And then with the election that the governor's saying we're going to have in June, that could throw everything off. I mean, if there's an election, if there's not an election, we know we're going to be cut. Right. And there's a good chance we'll be cut even if there is an election.
Yeah. So if I could just add
quickly, Ms. Castillo.
Okay.
I'm a bit confused because the information that I'm hearing you ask for is stuff that's in our budgets, it's in our unaudited actuals, it's in all of the financial documents that we approve at every meeting. I mean, you go up, here's the purchase orders. That's a very clear indication building fund. This month's $2,221.30 is being paid and who it's going to. So I'm just confused as to what is being asked for, because I mean, when I vote on something, I see the revenue limit in our financials. And so I don't want sort of a duplication of effort with our staff for something that we're already seeing. So I don't know if you could provide clarity to me on what is maybe different than what we approve, or
When we see these items in, say, for instance, the approval of purchase orders, mm-hmm. It tells us where it's going to go and the object description, some requisition information, and an amount. Mm-hmm. It's hard to facilitate that, then understand that, so that, you know, from a specific revenue quote, I'm going to use the EduJobs, for instance. You can't tell me, or it's very difficult to do, to tell me what that source of that revenue is. The way the account code structure is set up is that we can get a report that tells us exactly where the EduJobs money came in and what we intend to spend it on, either from actual for prior year or going forward. That's very difficult to develop out of a purchase order, list of purchase orders.
But
that's all I'm trying to do. It's just different formats of way that we've seen information in the past.
I thought with the EduJobs we got additional report on that, and we were told exactly.
And it may be. And we have, what's another one? Title I money. We have to make quarterly reports or periodic reports to our various governing entities. We don't get those as an ordinary basis. And so I would like to start seeing those so that we've got an idea of exactly how that money's coming in and how we intend to spend it.
Several years ago, when we started talking about our district's budget, Mr. Frutos and I made several presentations about the assumptions that we built into our budget. And I believe we described at the time that we saw things sort of in these circles of the most important thing to the board and to the district is the protection of class size, of students having the most updated adoption materials, of, you know, continuing to have the staff that could support the goals that we were heading for. And we put, if you recall, we put things in, these are the must-haves in order to improve achievement for students. And then we put another circle and said, these are now the supplementals to that. And then outside of that circle, we said, well, these are the nice things that you have when you have the money to do them. And we said to the board that that would be the premise by which we would operate unless the board directed otherwise. And we were, the last time the board in West Covina had budget cutting options, I believe, based on, you know, our records, was 2003. Since 2003, the district raised class size with Dr. Vladovic in order to have a budget that was balanced with, I think at the time, $5 million of a balance of some sort. And there were some things that were done prior to my arrival. I explained to the board that my way of budgeting recommendation to all of you is that you don't do these lottery lists that we have that say, you know, we'd like to buy, you know, Ellison Dyes and Blades program, ELL software program, we'd like, because we change the way our administrators make decisions. What we do is we say, here's the goals. Now, here's all the money on the table. So let's see what can pay for what. And then we go through with cabinet individual budgets. You have lottery, you have this, you have Title I, you have gifted, you have general funds. Here's what we're going to pay for in terms of a district to support you. Here are all the budgets you have to align yourselves with your councils to what you need to do at schools in order to meet your goals. So it was a little different approach than what you have been used to, because I recognize that in the past, you've had a lot of decisions, such as lottery. But I thought I had board support in the process that I used, because it leveraged funds and resources very specific to the school site and the input of the stakeholders at the school site rather than at the board table. And so we have carried that process out for the last 5 years. Having said all of that, I am open to, at any point in time that the board says, you know, based on what we're seeing in the budget that's coming to us on a monthly basis, we want to rethink those assumptions. In the case of the ed jobs, we brought, here's the federal parameters about it, here's our recommendation, this is why we're recommending that, and the board accepted that. And we explained that that would save general funds. So if, and I'm very open to this, if we need to have either a special meeting or at another time, sit and talk about what the assumptions should be in order to meet, you know, the continued improvements that we've made in achievement, I think that we should do that. I also agree, Mr. Cox, if you'd like at any point on any given month of this budget development calendar to say, you know, time out, let's look at those deferrals and when they're going to happen and how that impacts the cash flow, you know, and be more dissecting about it, right. I'm open to that as well. So it's just
we'll
a matter
just, we'll
of...
We'll just see how it flows. I just want to try to keep us as open to information as we can possibly get. And it may turn out that the just the general direction works just fine and we move forward.
Yeah. I've been very proud of the fact that, you know, during these difficult economic times in the last 5 years, you know, not only did we not have layoffs, but we gave raises, we improved instruction, we didn't, you know, have any kind of reduction in force, we met goals, the money was leveraged wisely, I think by recommendation, but this takes everyday management based on agreements with you. So I agree that we should revisit that, but I want you to know that I think we're in this position because of the approach that we've used.
All right, next item on the agenda is the audit reports of the Western Unified School District and San Jose Edison.
Okay. This is our yearly audit. It usually comes to us December or January. The board has to take action to receive it. These audits came in with no problems in terms of any of the fiscal standards that are required by the state. I was asked about San Jose Edison's audit and why it didn't include the other pieces that were done in the past in terms of contractual compliance. You know, there was 1 year where we did a special added to the normal audit, and that was, I believe, last year. Was it last year or the year before? I don't know. But they had made some recommendations. That was sort of an added piece that we had to pay for. So this piece that you're seeing is the basic yearly audit. If the board wants any kind of more information on either or even a program like special ed where we're doing right now a study, you're also able to direct us to add. This is the sort of minimum assurance to the state, the county, and everybody that we're solvent and that we're spending within our means in terms of what comes out at the end of the ending balance. The practices that we're using.
Questions, comments?
The only question I had is when we're looking at Edison's compared to ours, where it says other general administration, it looks like we spend about 5% and they spend about 15% in that area. Is part of that what we consider profit? And that's on page 17 of ours. Yes, because it compares both of them. So I was. And is that 15% because they're a smaller school? And it, the administration costs. Yes, it's in ours, and it has both our general fund and then the charter school fund on that same page. And then it's under other general administration. Under expenditures. And it looks like we spend about 5% of our total. And they spend about 15% of their total.
I think that's accurate.
So I was trying to figure out if they had more expenses because they were smaller and it cost more for administration, or if that's what we were looking at for their profit. I was trying to figure that out.
It's hard for me to define profit. I guess in my conversations with Edison Learning, they have articulated to us that you know, basically there are supports that San Jose Edison Academy gets directly from the management company. I don't know if all of that is accounted for in there or not. The only way I have of knowing exactly what happens after the books close is to give you our balance and to give you what money we send them at the end of every school year. And in the past years that I've been here, the money that we send them, the check that we give them after they've run the school for the year, varies from $1 million to 1.6. Now, how they label that money, whether it's profit or reimbursement for something, that, you know, we'd have to ask them to present.
Okay, she had her hand raised. I don't know.
Somebody wants to speak?
No.
She said she might have an answer. I don't. I can't call on you, so.
No.
I just think it's a little bit complicated, and we probably need to bring somebody from Edison Learning.
Right. Kathy, you want to speak to that, or? Would you come up to the microphone for us, please?
Part of our audit includes both the Edison expenditures and district expenditures. So when you're seeing our numbers, they're including the profit from Edison that they receive, as well as all other expenses, which are the 3% oversight fee, the $270 per ADA for Edison, I mean for West Covina for buybacks, which is about $501,000. So I did bring, just in case you guys asked those questions, I brought the quarterly report for the final quarterly report for 2010, and it kind of has a breakdown of the payment that went to Edison, which was $906,000, with the expenses that they incurred on our site direct.
Do you want to pass it?
Sure. And about as close as I could get. You know, we manage two site sets mm-hmm. of books. It's quite a chore. It's just like.
So this is for this past year?
Yes, that's ending. That does say June 2010, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So basically, what I've tried to show there is $906,000 is the funding that went from West Covina over to Edison. Then above at the top, those are. The revenue that came in from the extended daycare program at the very top, mm-hmm. and then the expenses that are incurred because we have about 20 employees paid through Edison, direct site employees, and some, what else do we have over there? Our professional development. And so the amount that's left was about $473,000.
Hmm. Does that include the money that we purchase materials from them? Where do you show the money that you spend on buying their products?
Most of them I've been purchasing through West Covina.
But like their data system and their assessments and things like that, where is that in here?
I actually did a buyback. I had a invoice to West Covina.
But that's on
so
here?
So benchmarks were paid through West Covina. I'm trying to get, because of, you know, the 1 year that we had the $1.6 million or so revenue sent to Edison, I know that misled the district as to, okay, they're making all this money. And part of the problem was many of our expenses were on the Edison side. So to avoid that problem, I have done my best to have our expenses paid through West Covina. So, for instance, benchmarks, I've had Edison bill them to West Covina, you know, to our budget on West Covina side, so that we can show most of our expenditures through West Covina. That way, on our interim reports, they're more reflective of what our expenses truly are. By just sending the check to Edison, our interim reports do not reflect how we really spend our money, because all of that ends up in the 5810 account, the object account, like Mr. Cox is mm-hmm. trying to explain. He wants to see where the money's being spent. It doesn't give a true picture, because you see a check going to Edison out of 5810. Well, that's really not saying, well, we spent...
So are you saying, just simply, are you saying that the 15% that Cammie's talking about is 473? Is that what you're saying?
473,000.
Is that 15% of your budget?
No.
Okay.
But that number includes, I believe, that what she's looking at, the 15%, probably includes the 3% buybacks to the district, the, oversight, the 270, it's about 500,000 plus the 473 plus... any other services that we
okay,
had.
Okay, so in layman's terms, what is the profit on this page?
473,000.
Okay, so that's what you consider the profit?
Yes.
Okay, and that doesn't include any profit that they make for many other, you know, that includes...
That's strictly our site.
That's strictly your
and
site.
And it does not include any of their central costs.
Or their or they pay for certain people on your campus?
No, that does include... They don't pay for them, but we have employees on our campus. That's included in this. So the bottom line is $473,000 goes to Edison. To
that's what you consider their profit.
Right.
Okay.
That's what I consider their profit. Now, all of the things they provide us, so say they provide us, like when they did the architectural work for the building that we were starting to have for E2, things like that, they pay direct and they depreciate against our site at the bottom line, but it doesn't really count against us. They just show it as a tool for them. So anything that they purchase for us in capital items is not charged to our site. I hope that makes sense.
Kim, do you have more?
Oh, I'm just trying to figure out where, like it says, the West Covina USD revenue analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Then it talks about the 3% oversight. If I was going to look at our audit reports, would that be under school site administration? Is that under other general administration?
I think it fell under the administration piece, I believe.
Okay, because
the way they clustered... It's kind of hard. They clustered things a little bit.
Well, that would make sense because we spend about 7% and you spend about 10%.
Okay.
So then part of that 3% might
there
be
you go,
there.
10% and 5%.
And I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, this is trying to make something simple that's very complicated.
Right.
But, you know, I appreciate the effort and the explanation. Where you have salaries paid through Edison.
Those are all direct salaries that Edison pays.
Right. And how do they reflect that? How do you reflect those costs in your budget? Or how do they? In this $473,000, have they subtracted these people that they're paying for?
Yes.
You believe they have?
No, I've done that.
You
I do that.
Okay. You
I
do
already
this.
Do it.
Okay.
Yes, I'm the one that manages all that piece. So basically what I do is I get a report from Edison. They have a combined. I send you guys quarterly reports. I don't know if you ever see them, but I do send a quarterly report to you that reflects a management program that we have on the Edison side. It's basically a combination of both district paid expenses and Edison paid expenses for our site, because the bottom line is our site is, I need to know where our site is financially. Not the rest of Edison, and not the rest of West Covina. So I follow our, we have a, just like we have Scape here, we have Lawson for Edison for our site only. And I'll pull out a report strictly for Edison paid
mm-hmm.
Expenses.
Yeah, there's just some things here that, for example, central costs include depreciation for site portables. We don't do that in our budget. I mean, there are
right.
some things that you, again, it sort of goes back to the statement of how is Edison's budget built on what assumptions? That's never been given to us. What are the assumptions?
I would love to give you all that information.
Okay, so let's just agree that it's a great beginning of a dialogue that probably would need future follow-up, and I'll have Dana work with you to just keep providing more information,
sure.
Because I think as information is looked at and understood, it makes for better decisions and better understanding.
I agree.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
You're no longer at the Francis Guido site either, right?
Oh, do I have Francis Guido?
The central costs include depreciation for the site portables at Francis Guido site.
We still own some of those.
So, but those portables are gone at Francis Guido.
Not the ones you're thinking of. The ones that were installed through us. That would include.
Well, Mr. Frutos had a whole feeling about who owns what and who.
Right.
Who I don't even want to go there.
Okay, but the only reason I listed that on there is if you look at the Edison. If you got the quarterly reports, I always give a copy of the Edison financials. On there, you'll see income, less expenses, and then it goes into a whole thing on depreciation and central costs and things like that, which shows that they really don't make even that amount of money, the 473. This 473 is my basic taking revenue, less our direct site expenses, okay? So when you look at the Edison report, you'll see all these other things that maybe you wouldn't understand, and that's all I'm trying to explain there is that the 473 does not include their central headquarter costs for our site, does not include depreciation of any materials that they purchase on our behalf, does not include capital, things like that. So,
yeah. I think, and especially as we talk about dependent versus independent, there are other things that are going to come in terms of costs to you,
mm-hmm.
Should services be provided by other than West Covina Unified. Mm-hmm. And the advantages that I believe both Edison Management and Edison have had because of the being a dependent of the district. So we'll talk about that. I think most important is you and Dana seem to have really good communication.
Yes, we do.
And I think there's a better understanding of how we go along. When I've had conversations with representatives from Edison Learning, they have all different ways of explaining this to me.
I tried to put it as simple as I could. I tried.
So, but I thank you for trying.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
All right.
There was just one other thing. It seems like, and this is for West Covina Unified, we have ongoing difficulty with our ASBs.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be in place now where we don't see this in the future?
It seems like every time we have an audit, we sit with the school and say, okay, provide the plan to remedy this accountability that you're now going to have. And they do provide that to us, and inevitably, this seems to be an area that is in constant change and constant, things aren't timely, we're working on it. There isn't a system for them as there is for the district as a whole for that particular account, so we're looking at ways to make that more efficient.
And is it the principal that's ultimately responsible for that?
Yes, he is, and he understands it, and the people at the school understand it, but is managing it day to day that it has become a challenge. So we need to have a system for them to be able to track and look at things.
And can it be universal between all, because it wasn't just at one school.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. Yeah, we're looking into that as well. I don't know if you're aware that our system, we have, for lack of a better word, sort of an antiquated system in the district. Because our system doesn't necessarily, for example, their system and our system is different. Our system and the SELPA system is different. Our system and the county is the same, but the input into it doesn't go at the same time. So it is a constant challenge that those systems reflect accurately a point in time. And usually that's not the case. Eventually, things kind of go in and out, and that's why we continue to have this. But we're committed to working on it, and Alex is totally on board with that.
All right.
Mr. Cox?
Yes, Mr. Scott.
Can we get those quarterly reports when they come in?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. I need a motion to receive the audit reports.
Are there any other questions?
I'll move it.
A second?
I'll second.
And moved by Kamipolis, seconded by Eileen Miranda-Jimenez. To receive the audit reports for West Covina Unified School District, San Jose Edison Academy for the 2009-2010 fiscal year. Any objections? Hearing none, motion so ordered. Item 12 is on developer fee increase.
Board, my understanding from our business department and their records indicate that the last time the board adjusted developer fees was in 2002. They are asking for the board to allow the district to become more aligned to the current state developer fee amount.
Questions, comments?
I have a question.
Mr. Spence?
What are we, which of the three methods are we using to justify the increase in the developer tax?
I don't know what of three methods you're referring to, but my information states that it's the state's.
Well, the state allocation board, I mean, this is a level three number, right? The number in here is just level three. Looks like it's level three. Well, because normally, I mean, my understanding is you have to either have a developer justification study, or you have to have a facilities master plan that includes this, or a five-year plan that includes explaining how the nexus of development leads to the increased enrollment that needs to be that we need developer fees in order to do modernization or new schools. At least that's my understanding. In order to legally justify it, one of those three things have to have taken place. I know in the past we've approved developer fee studies, because I know I voted against them, and so I know we've approved them. 2002 sounds like a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding was one of those three things had to be in place, because you have to show that there's a nexus between, like I said, the development and the increase in development and the enrollment in school that justifies taking the developer fees to use it for new schools or to modernize facilities, classrooms, et cetera.
I will have to get back to you on that, but what they wrote to me was that the district is allowed to stay in line with the current rates issued by the state in order to ensure that we are maximizing revenue. That's what they've written to me, that the business office here believes that we have a right to be more in line with the current rates issued by the state in order to ensure that we are maximizing revenue. They believe that this is ultimately up to the board. Says that the last time this was done based on their records was 2002, and that they feel, the business division, that this was long overdue, and the board should consider it. So I'll find out if they're...
Well, then can we table this to the next meeting? Sure. So we can
I get also a some sort of an idea as to how much in fees that we've not over that two, you know, eight-year period, but just even
year
the last
year.
2 years. Yeah, don't, just for the last 2 years.
Okay.
Just the last 2 years, the income and expenses, developer fee, income and what we used it for. And I believe that it's all through that facilities, capital, or what is it?
Yeah, it is through the capital facilities.
Capital some facilities fund, or it was one of those, or the building fund. I think it's capital, whatever.
Okay, yeah. I think it does go there. Okay.
But that just get an idea where we are on what and what specific needs and uses that they anticipate using it for. Mm-hmm. Right. So we'll table this item. Moving on to item 13. Mr. Spence, you asked this to be removed?
Yeah, I did. Maybe you can help me out a little bit on this. You know, the state board has a meeting that's going on, I think, tomorrow. And there's not a meeting in January, so I'm trying to figure out if when it is our actual deadline, and how does that work with the waiver of the 60 days? And I guess I'm a little concerned that there's not enough time to get the waiver, because it was February 1st that they're due, right?
Right. Well, obviously they caused this problem, the state.
Yeah, I get that. That there's not if this was the only one. If this was the only one.
Okay, Ms. Valentine.
Take our name if potentially wanted to be included in that list.
Okay, so we've told the state board we want to be included in this list?
Well, we've told them that...
we're bringing it to you.
Right, and so we had to tell the board action date, which is today's date,
mm-hmm.
but they needed to have an indication from us by last Friday that we would... possibly be bringing that to them.
Okay. And when did we know then that there was going to be the problem? I mean,
it was December. Oh, it was late. I think it was maybe right after the last board meeting. It was December.
Okay. Because we did have a couple special board meetings. We probably could have added it real quick to the agenda. And is that 60 days sufficient to get it done? Or, I mean, I'm confused. I guess on the process how that works. Mm-hmm.
But because the board is sort of making, the state is making this sort of a mass
mm-hmm.
waiver, they wrote the language that specifies a 60-day extension.
But not every school district is applying for the waiver, right? There's some school districts that did comply.
I don't know. I know because of, I would say it was last Wednesday,
Any more?
Well, I guess I'm just a little confused on why we can't get it done, but.
Well, they created the waiver process because they did not inform us until late December this was going to be required and that mm-hmm. these things had to be followed. Obviously, they knew that most districts were going to react like what, when, what happened, and they themselves instituted this waiver process.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we want to do it. We want to be involved in it. We want to submit the waiver, and we'll get it done ASAP.
Okay.
Is there a motion on this item?
I'm with this item.
The second. Been moved by Cammie Polis, second by Jessica Shoemaker, to approve the request for the waiver deadline for the 2010 school accountability report cards under the Public School Accountability Act. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion so ordered. Options Head Start, item number 14. Options Head Start, memo of understanding. Mr. Spence, you asked this to be removed also?
I did, and thank you for providing the MOU. That was the issue last time, was it wasn't in the agenda. I guess my question is, there's a lot of different things in here that we expect from Head Start as far as services and things they're going to provide, and what I didn't see was how we were going to ensure that they do that, how we're going to audit them, or how we ensure that those services are actually being done.
Well, their signature on the MOU will say that they're going to do it. If they don't do what they say they're going to do, I suppose, we'll have to follow that up with them in terms of ramifications and steps that we would take forward if they don't abide by what they're saying.
Those are things they're mandated to do.
They're mandated to do, yes.
They're not just doing it for us. Those are their mandates.
Oh.
So there's someone bigger than us that they're going to answer to if they don't do those things.
Okay, well, I guess I still have the same question, which is, it's fine to say someone's signing it. I mean, do they do an audit that we get a copy of? Does someone audit them to see that they're doing these things? I mean, I guess that's my question.
Yeah.
What is their oversight? After we authorize this, what is their oversight? I mean, I understand, their signature, I understand.
The internal audit process that they go through?
They go through that with the state.
Yes. They go over their, my understanding of the options Head Start, the state comes in and checks their memorandum of understanding and makes sure that they're following them because they have to have them in place to get their funding. And then they're audited by the states. And they might share those with us. I have never asked.
Can we add that.
Yeah, that's what I like. Mm-hmm. That's what I like to see.
Mm-hmm. So as part of the MOU, Ellie, we'll just add that we're requesting copy of
mm-hmm.
the audit and compliance instrument. Okay.
That's it. That's all I had. I'll move it with that addendum.
Second.
It's been moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Jessica Shoemaker, to approve the interagency agreement between the district and Options Head Start to facilitate a collaboration in the provision of services to preschool students, children with disabilities, in compliance with federal and California state laws and regulations. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion so ordered. Item number 15, authorization to apply for the ACES ASES grant program site expansion.
We are required to continue to apply for this grant should we want to continue this program for our after-school eligible sites, and we believe that by doing this grant, we will be able to expand this program to sites. Is that correct, Ellie?
Okay. When I was looking over the governor's budget, it looked like that he was going to not authorize child care anymore for 11 and 12 year olds. Mm-hmm. Does that fall under this category or is it something else?
No.
Okay.
And we're generally satisfied with the programs that
mm-hmm.
we're offering.
It's getting better and better. Mm-hmm.
Comments?
All moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
And moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis, to approve to submit an application to extend the ACES program to other eligible sites. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion is ordered. Title number 16, Title III Improvement Plan.
Okay, Ms. Valentine.
Well, I was concerned, how can I put this, when we had, you know, various people come up here and talk about, when we had the principals come in and talk about their schools and things like that, you know, and what they're doing as far as trying to make things better, not just in Title III, but period, you know, it talked about teacher training and monitoring, it talked about monitoring student progress and et cetera. But when I go through this, when I look at the weaknesses, you know, that you have listed here, there's a lot of that. You know, there's a lot of teachers report they don't consistently use it, inconsistent use, you know, of the materials, inconsistent monitoring of progress. And it kind of concerned me because that's kind of a disconnect from what the principals are saying when they come to us about what's going to happen on the campus, and then what seems to be happening when we have to put in this Title III remedial plan. And so I guess I'm trying to figure out, I'm assuming this is accurate, more accurate than the presentations, you know, how is that going to gel or how is that going to change, you know, from what we're told is going to happen and what actually is happening?
For not only the English acquisition level, but for their student content acquisition level. So there are two things going on all the time. So though principals make that a great focus, and they work at it very hard, and we have made good growth, we certainly have a lot more room to grow. Overall, the target for math curriculum efficiency, both, you know, district-wide, was, I believe, 56% in 2010. Our English learners as a group district-wide performed at 53.6%. So though all of our schools have made growth in that area, the growth is insufficient to meet that target.
Right.
And I think that there is widespread agreement by our principals and even by teachers that they realize the way to get better results is by more consistent implementation. And many of these things that you noted were sort of self-reported. They asked, what can we do to improve? People said, you know what, I need to be more consistent about that. Or this strategy, when I find that this strategy isn't working, I need to be more aggressive about finding the next one and implementing it consistently. So I think both are right. We have made a great deal of progress. Yet I think there is very much self-awareness that instructional practices have to continually improve to have results in students.
So how will we know that that's happening? How will we know that? Like at the end of the school year, how will we know that?
Well, in terms of monitoring instructional practice, that would be site level principals monitoring what type of instructional practices they are actually seeing in the classroom. For example, back in the summer, I met with a group of principals when we sort of focused our professional development for the year, and we're working on a lesson study series, and principals identified sort of big general areas that we want to focus on. We with mathematics, especially in the secondary schools, the success of English learners in other subgroups, and then based on that, we worked with TeachScape, who provides our professional development, that all of the professional development this year in terms of improving instruction through lesson study is focused in those areas. So if the principals are working with the group that being trained at their sites, then they go back. The teachers are also observing each other, but the principals are observing them in this whole process. It really at this point is very much about improving instructional practices and not just improving them when you have, you know, in the lesson study process, but then transferring that to every day. So every day it's providing the highest quality instruction for students, both in content and in the case of English learners, doing it to help them acquire English at the same time.
Thank you.
Jessica. Right. Is there a motion to
I'll move it.
It's been moved by Cameron Polis, seconded by Steve Cox to approve the Title III Improvement Plan as required. Any objections? Hearing none, motion so ordered. Number 17 is the East St. Gabriel Valley Special Education Local Planning Area Plan, SELPA plan. Let's see what. Okay. Yes.
The SELPA office is asking to make modifications to its existing agreement with districts. They require all districts to agree in order to make the changes and modifications that they are asking for. We had a lot of discussions in the superintendent's council about some of these changes. They are getting a legal opinion about some of the things that they are anticipating, and is, in my opinion, still in a state of discussion and flux in terms of which way it's going to turn out. But they had a deadline to get this before you, so we brought it forward.
Under those circumstances, and we know that there's a deficit, it sounds like they're getting a legal opinion on if they can even do this, that either we table it or we, if they need to know an answer now, I'm going to vote no, because it doesn't sound like they even know if they can do it.
Would you rather us table it or?
They need an answer, So I'd rather you vote.
Okay. Any other comments, Spence?
Since it's before us and these are the possible changes, I might as well ask the questions about it now. Even though, because of the student of the SELPA, there is no way I will vote for a contract with them until I see something that puts controls in place over their spending and their allocation formula. So I don't know if that's a message we may want to send back also. What did the Section A under governance, the second paragraph that's underlined, that's obviously the new paragraph. What does the contract say now, the agreement say now?
The changes have to do with allowing new membership into the SELPA.
Is it currently by a majority vote, or are they?
Yes. No. Right now, we have a structure that does not allow us to take a charter school from another sponsoring district and bring them over. And this would be unique in their experience through contracts with the existing districts. And so this IQ charter, who is sponsored by Roland, Roland has basically said to them, go belong to that SELPA. Does that make sense?
Is there any reason we have to have it as a majority vote to accept new members, or?
Right, they're existing.
But can we change it from majority?
Well, that's what they're getting a legal opinion on.
Okay. I would like to see it be by more than a majority vote.
I believe that we're advocating it has to be unanimous. Because it has tremendous implications in all districts and all partners.
Yeah. Okay, that's the only question I have.
I mean, I have a question about the SELPA, just because they changed the formula, and I want to get those numbers, but that, you know, how that affects us, the new numbers, but I don't have a question. I'm kind of surprised by changing the governance structure, from the boards to the superintendent's council. I mean, at this point, I kind of question that part of it, but I still want to see those figures. But that's a separate issue. Mm-hmm. But you can write that down. I want to see the
figures. I will.
How the new formula pencils out. But I was just kind of surprised.
I amend the motion to say that we move to not approve the revised local plan.
We can do it to approve and vote no. What would you rather have?
Either way,
let's
fine.
Just leave it the way it is and then vote accordingly. Mm-hmm. So is there a motion on this item?
Well, I'm not going to move to approve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
All right. Well, so we can't not take action, so.
The action is not to approve.
Hold on just a second. I'll get there. But so that's why I'm asking you. Are they looking for an action? Does it matter?
Up or down?
No, but I mean. All right, but it was written in here to approve the revised.
Because that's how they word it.
Okay.
So if you vote no, you're not approving
to
revise.
Well, no, if it fails by, you know, without getting a motion or a second, then the motion fails.
Right.
That doesn't send a strong enough message of absolutely no way. Because by saying not approve, we have a five-oh vote at that point.
You want us to be?
I want you to be clear. The answer is no.
All right. Well, then let's change the wording then to not approve.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'll move that as amended.
I'll second that.
All right. The motion before us is to not approve the revised local plan with changes to the governance section and one SELPA policy. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion passes 5-0. The motion not to approve.
I know we can't discuss it right now, but at the next meeting I would like to discuss reissuing or taking action to continue our effort to leave the SELPA at this time.
because I think we have to tell them each year if we're planning, and since we don't have anybody a close enough sample to take us right now, but we can continue to know, and I think that'll send a motion, let them know that we're still looking at other options.
Yeah,
but we can't discuss that now, but I would like it.
You're bring that
we'll
back
bring
to
it
us.
Back. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, number 18, they have signed off on these changes.
Edison has?
Yes.
Right. So then what does that mean? We don't, it's not.
So it's your decision to either go with their recommendation or not.
Well, we have to vote on it.
This is an odd thing. I mean, you're saying San Jose Edison has already approved?
Edison Learning has signed off on the changes that the SELPA wants to make.
Do you sit on the superintendent's council for them?
Yes, I do.
And how could I don't understand if it's on our agenda how they could approve it.
Because they wanted us to bring it forward to you as a separate item from ours. There is a request from Edison to allow the principal to be the representative on the superintendent's council. The council's discussion on that is that so far they are not willing to do that. And because of the fact that they're going to get an opinion back to Edison Learning about that, and they sent me asking me to bring this forward, I want it to be your decision as to what you want to do with it.
Any other comments?
I'm not going to vote to approve it because I feel very strongly that they need to get their act together.
And I don't think they have clear understanding of what's going on because obviously they have separate conversations with the SELPA office and the SELPA wants this to be brought forward, and so they've endorsed that and said bring it forward.
Who they?
The school has communications with
Edison
Sarah Jockum. Yeah.
Okay.
No, the school, not Edison Learning. San Jose Edison has communication with Sarah Jockum. The form is signed by Laverne White.
Okay, but they've agreed to.
They agree to the changes.
I mean, this just seems silly. Who's asking us to?
You're the sponsoring board still. For Edison Learning, for San Jose Edison Academy.
And they've told us that they want to go ahead and,
yes.
and accept it.
Correct.
Okay.
Kathy has turned up.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to say something? No?
Can I?
If you like.
Actually, I know Laverne signed off on a LACO contract that we've been trying to get to the board. I wasn't sure that she signed off on this one.
No.
I know I sent this to the district to get approved because that's kind of the mandated requirement for SELPA. Every year you have a signed contract. Is that not correct?
No, that's not correct.
It's not? Every year it doesn't go to?
Every year it goes, but we have the right to say no. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have not as a board and a district accepted their agreement. Because we feel that they have been fiscally irresponsible in their operating
of the
yes. SELPA. And so they have been operating all year without our board's agreement to what they're doing. We're still under discussion with them about the concerns that we have, and that's one of the reasons that we're not willing to make changes in a plan that the first plan hasn't served us, and this plan probably will serve us less. So I think there's a lack of communication, and when we receive that, I know you believe that if the county sends you something, you have to do it. But our
the
legal
county one's different than this one. Well, okay. I believe.
Okay.
What
you have there? Can I see that?
Mm-hmm. Is this the one we're discussing?
No.
Oh.
Well. Let me see the form that Laverne sent.
Well, this is
just one of the SELPA creates.
Yeah. See, this is what they do, right? They send this. But you automatically don't say, yes, we agree to your terms. We discuss it with the board, and the board says, we like the terms, we don't like the terms, right? And I think that perhaps Laverne signed it thinking that it was the right thing to do.
There's another one she signed for the LACO contract that we're trying to get.
No, that's not what we're discussing. I haven't.
No, I know, but I don't know that she signed this one, but maybe. Okay. I just haven't seen it.
All right, well.
What do you want to do? I don't.
So yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
I honestly think that we should remove that item and just use ours for now.
Yeah.
It's not appropriate.
It's not two separate entities. And
okay.
If you want to give an inclination as to that you're, you know, willing to accept their proposals, they can deal with however they want to deal with it.
Well, that's what the question is going to be. That's where the attorneys get involved in their wrangling.
Let's just do ours. We'll table this item. Mm-hmm. Next item on the agenda is item number, or going to the board policies, item number 24. Mr. Spence, you asked to have this removed.
I did, and at the last board meeting, I asked a couple of questions, and the ed code section's corrected. I still had the question about whether or not the teachers of students with autism, for the new special education teacher stuff for middle and high schools, whether or not that applied here, and I didn't get an answer to that yet. I know I sent it to you, actually.
Okay,
There was a... The State Department of Education approved for new special education teachers. They can teach if they're currently enrolled in an approved special education intern program for less than 3 years and hold a special education or holds a special education credential and can demonstrate subject matter competence in mathematics, language, arts, science. May demonstrate competence in another core academic subject in which the teacher teaches through the high objective uniform state standard evaluation contained in Article 2, Section 6104. No later than 2 years after employment. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the waivers they applied for middle school and high school teachers. And I didn't know if it applied here or if it was in a different section. That was my question.
Yes.
That's why I emailed that to you.
Yes, yes, got it.
And
Mr.
I don't
Seaman.
Know. I don't have an answer to
Mr.
that.
Mr. Seaman researched that, I believe.
Well, I mean, what I understand that you're reading there, it basically applies to NCLB qualifications. There's a lot of things with the state with the special ed credential and having teachers competent in all subject areas or specific subject areas of an SDC class, and a secondary level being NCLB compliant in all subject areas. So there are, that is sort of the state's way of being able to house new teachers instead of not new teachers, because the house option for NCLB was for not new teachers, and this would apply to now new teachers in special ed areas only, though. And so if your question is, can we hire teachers in that vein? The answer is yes.
Okay, well, my question, though, was in this AR with special education staff,
okay.
When it gets to teachers of students with autism,
right.
You know, it has standards in here, but it doesn't reference the NCLB code, or not the code, the CDE code for new teachers on the NCLB.
Yeah, and so autism is more specific.
Well, that's what my question was. That's what my question was whether or not that standard applies to this or is in a different place or how that works. That was my question.
The standard that you read was more about subject matter competence. This is about being able to teach a student with an autism disability because there are disability requirements also for special ed.
Okay.
So this particular section you see on 24F is sort of, I don't want to say waiver, but it's the way to make things a little bit easier for now to get people, teachers qualified to teach students with autism before it becomes very restrictive.
Right, but it is not, so it does not include then what the CDE has for all other special ed teachers.
No.
Is that correct?
This is about disability and that other piece that you read.
Mm-hmm.
It's about subject matter competence. Two different things.
Well, yeah, but it's for special education teachers, and so that's
it
why.
Is,
but that's why I wanted to know whether or not that applies to autism.
Special education teachers have to meet both. They have to be
mm-hmm.
subject
right.
matter competent, whatever the teaching, and they have
right.
to be qualified to teach.
So there's a
students that have certain disabilities in their class.
So there's a different standard then for teachers of students with autism than there is with teachers with students with other disabilities. That's what I'm hearing. Is that correct?
Yes, but that applies for even more than just autism. There's other disabilities that you have.
I okay, mean, but underneath
hard of hearing, there's different requirements.
But underneath this AR, that's why that standard's not in there.
Yes, and
okay.
Autism is
okay.
a topic that DDC, CDE is trying to address right now.
No, okay. You answered my question. Thank you.
Anything else? Mm-mm. Anybody else on any of the board policies or administrative regulations? No. Is there a motion for this item, please? Mm-hmm. Is there a second?
Mm-hmm. I'll second it.
Okay. Okay. Top secret.
Ms. Shoemaker moved?
I'll tell her in a minute. I said it's top secret.
No wonder she doesn't get the minutes right.
Yeah.
She can't hear you guys.
All right. The motion has been, it was moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cammie Bolas, to adopt the board policies as listed in the agenda. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion is ordered. So ordered. Any other board discussion?
Yes,
Cammie, go ahead.
I was wondering if we could agendize to get an update on what happened after our last meeting with Edison regarding the special ed, where they are on the matrix. And there was talk about them becoming in.
We had intended to talk about it at this meeting. I thought there were other issues that are going on. It has to be removed and so that we could take to on. So it's my understanding, right, that this is going to be on the 25th. Mm-hmm. The whole addressing the Edison issues and going forth on the 25th.
Okay.
We've already discussed that.
Okay.
Yes.
And that included the independent and dependent portion?
Well, that's what Mr. Spence had originally requested.
He had originally requested, so it was going to be that plus the update on the matrix and where we are in that.
Just to caution you, though, in communications with Tom Jackson, the counsel for Edison Learning, he has indicated that he would prefer that the board not discuss necessarily the independent, dependent status because he has an attorney who is reviewing the pros and cons. They're interested, but, you know, it really needs to be mutual that we bring that forward. It isn't like we can anoint them one thing or another. It takes
a whole process.
Right?
No, it's something that...
Right, but what Cammie's asking is different. Cammie's...
I'll get to that second. On the independent-dependent issue, we can have a discussion, but we can't do something unilaterally. This is something that they have to come to us because, in my opinion, it involves, among other things, a change in the contract. And a change in the contract would require, we can't do that unilaterally. That would be something that they would request of us. We can still have a discussion independent, dependent if we want to, but the matters that that Cammie's asked for, I would like to bring forward on the 25th. That's why I understood that we talked about
that. Okay.
Mr. Spence?
I don't care what Tom Jackson wants. But one of the reasons on the independent-dependent thing, though, that it's an issue is that when they were talking about governance structure, because we've always referred to CAVA as an independent charter, but yet their governance structure actually has places on there for board and district representatives. And so, you know, in that sense, they're actually more dependent than, like, Edison Learning, Inc. is, where there's no one on the Edison, Inc. Learning Board. And so, I mean, that's why I had some questions about how that actually applies to CAVA, because we've always referred to it as independent, but their governing structure really doesn't tell us that. That's why I wanted to have a discussion about it. If you want to have a discussion about it in February, that's fine.
I think it's good to have a discussion. I think it should be an informed discussion.
Oh.
Because our limited knowledge of the current state, based on your dialogue about this issue, requires more information. And so,
that's why we need time.
You know, CAVA is sponsored by our district.
Mm-hmm.
However, they have a board.
Right.
Edison, San Jose Edison Academy does not have a board.
Right.
You are their board. There is no other board. They have a trustee board that deals with the profit-making management company. Right? And they are a school that is dependent upon district services, district support, amongst district oversight. The oversight issue is one that needs to be had. The clarification of any language or if they do intend, and that's why I wanted you to be informed that they are looking at the pluses and minuses of becoming nonprofit and becoming an independent charter school.
Yep.
Having said all of that, our attorney has repeatedly advised the board that the oversight doesn't go away, even for CAVA. When there's an issue with special ed, the state writes to me and says, fix this issue. So, you know, we'll have those discussions, and I'm happy to do that. I really think that it's important that you have as much information as possible when you have that discussion.
And that's fine.
We'll
and
just
that's
keep
fine.
Moving forward on that.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why that's kind of piqued that kind of interest. In our packet, we got Title I numbers. Thank you. I would like to know the numbers of kids at those campuses that qualify for Title I, so I can do my math stuff, even though the superintendent explained that if I think equal means dollar for dollar, I'm wrong. I still think that's what equal means, so I want to see what those numbers are. And then the other thing I had was, is there anything we're doing in the district, or if we can find out if anyone's doing anything around February 6th, where both President Obama and Governor Schwarzenegger signed legislation concerning the centennial of the birth of Ronald Reagan, that is being celebrated on February 6th, if there's anything special being done. I'd like to know about it.
I haven't received anything, but...
Oh, well, there's lots of stuff.
I'm glad you're in the know.
So,
pass it along.
There's lots of stuff going on.
We'll look at it.
Even President Obama signed it, so, you know.
We do want to discuss Counselor's Recognition Week at the next board meeting.
Discuss Counselor Recognition Week? Or just have it?
Well...
And I do want...
Have a... what is it called? No. Proclamation.
Oh, yeah. We don't want to discuss it. We just want to do it.
And I just want to let you know, tonight was that city celebration of the CIF football game, and I did send a letter to the city staff to tell them, to thank them for what they did and thank them for the recognition. Be sure to thank the Castrucci Foundation on our behalf, and I did tell them that we had the meeting tonight and wouldn't be able to attend. Dates to remember, January 17th is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it is a holiday. Schools will be closed. There was some discussion earlier in question regarding Friday the 14th. Are all schools in session on the 14th?
Friday the 14th, they should be in session, correct?
Right.
No, wait. Oh.
No, that's
secondary
a secondary.
Schools have a non-pupil day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Secondary schools only.
Teachers
only
will be here.
All staff is
supposed to be here.
It's a staff work day.
Staff work day.
It still means it's a work day.
But kids are not in school. Yes. The secondary school. Okay.
Secondary.
All right. January 25th, we get to do this all over again. More fun and games. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting at 9:15.